We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
It's time for the Mountaineer Insider Podcast. Get insight into your favorite West Virginia University teams and hear exclusive interviews. The Mountaineer Insider Podcast. Have a question or comment? Call or text us at 304-314-4161 or email us at wvumsn@gmail.com. Now let's go live inside our MSN studios. Here's your host of the Mountaineer Insider, Dan Zangrilli.
What's going on, Mountaineer Nation? It's great to be back with you here for another edition of the MSN Insider Podcast here on WVUSports.com and across many other podcast platforms where you get your MSN content streaming on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, you name it, we've got it. Be sure to follow us at WVUMSN for the latest on all things WVU and, of course, across WVU Sports on Twitter as well. Well, coming to you one day removed from a very historic day, a very exciting day yesterday at the WVU Coliseum, the sixth coach ever in the history. And it's really amazing to think about it here. It was so historic, right? A 21-year run for Mike Carey and the introduction, which was hit out of the park for Don Plitzewite coming from South Dakota after a fantastic six-year run there, is really just starting to kind of catch hold. And everybody that I've talked to has been like, whoa, wait a second here. This is one impressive woman that can really lead WVU women's basketball and exceed the high expectations and the lofty standards that have preceded it. And on this week's edition of the podcast, I have had the opportunity earlier this morning here, coming to you on a Wednesday late morning. A few moments ago, I was able to wrap up a lengthy conversation with an extremely engaging head coach in Coach P. We learned a lot about her resume. Obviously, you can read in press releases her accomplishments, her stops along the way, and you can take a look at her body of work on the court. And that's all accessible and readily available for a lot of folks who've already done that legwork and have looked at this very impressive hire by Shane Lyons and many others to bring Don Plitzewite to the University City. So what I wanted to do here, and I'm so glad and appreciative that Coach was willing to take the time in a very, very busy, hectic schedule to speak with me, chat with me at length about who she is, what she's about, and we learn her upbringing. And really, from day one, how she grew up. She's a farm girl, and she is used to rising with the chickens. And she initially wanted to be a kindergarten teacher, but her life's work and her passion for basketball obviously took her down a coaching path that has been very, very successful, obviously the right path. We learn more about Coach P's family, and we learn about what's on her immediate checklist. She talks about being in the precious present, and I was so very thankful to be in the precious present with Dawn Plitzwhite. I hope you enjoy this week's edition of the Mountaineer Insider Podcast. Well, Coach, what a whirlwind it's been for you here from Vermilion now to Morgantown. Have you had an opportunity to kind of wrap your head around it, to catch your breath at all, and really drink all of it in that here you are, a Power 5 head coach at WVU?
Well, I think probably this morning was the first time that I was able to do that. So since March 5th, when we started our conference tournament at the University of South Dakota, until April 5th, the day of the press conference, it was just nonstop. And so this morning, before my mom left town, I actually had a time to sit down and drink some coffee with her and actually kind of take it in and reflect upon it. You know, I had a chance last night to text our two kids, AJ and Lexi, who both went back to college, and, you know, thank them for coming, because it's hard. You know, it's hard for them to leave school right now. They've missed enough for basketball already, you know, but certainly was appreciative of them being here. And so I had a chance to kind of exchange a few thoughts with them in the last day or so. And just, you know, during that whole process, I had a chance to kind of smile and relax a little bit and say, okay, now let's get to work. You know, let's have some fun with this.
So, and what I want to do here over the next handful of minutes that we spend with you, Coach, is get to know you a little bit better. Obviously, we got a terrific introduction to you at your press conference, and you've spoken with some other folks. And I want to talk to you maybe about who shaped you, how you fell in love with the game, and how your path has really formulated the coach that you are. Before we get to that, though, share with me those emotions, that moment of pause and reflection that you were able to have this morning over coffee. Are you okay sharing that moment with Mom?
Well, it was. Yeah, it was. It was a very special opportunity, you know, to actually kind of realize, you know, the years of the love of the game, you know, and how. And this is kind of the background too, but I grew up on a farm in West Bend, Wisconsin, and in probably fifth or sixth grade started playing basketball. That was way before the AAU days, and just loved being on the court and running up and down and having a whole lot of fun with it. Had a sixth grade basketball coach that probably influenced me as much as anyone, just because it was all about, yeah, we're going to work hard, but we're going to smile and we're going to have fun and we're going to love it. And, you know, during my high school career, was a multi-sport athlete, but in the mornings before we'd start, all the farmers would get together at one little church and play basketball at 5:30 or 6 o'clock in the morning before we'd all go off and do our different things, and, you know, just learn to have a lot of fun in the game and compete at a very high level. And so we just kind of had some time this morning to say, can you imagine, did you ever imagine that this is what it would be? And for me, it's not something that I really ever look at and say, this is my end goal. It was more of, we're going to be in the precious present. We're going to enjoy the moment. We're going to work our tails off, and then we're going to see where that leads. And that's really what this has been, a career at this point in time of 27 years in coaching. When I thought I was going to be a kindergarten teacher, that's what I was planning on. That's what I went to school to be. And then, you know, I think what happened during my recruitment process in college is that I picked a school in Michigan Tech University that didn't exactly have what I wanted to study. They didn't have early elementary education or elementary education. It was secondary education. And I picked the school based upon who the people were, the coaches and the team. And it wasn't as if that was the team that was at the top. It was a team that was building and just fell in love with, understood that, you know, like the people were the most important part of the whole college decision-making process for me. And so I think a lot of those opportunities have kind of influenced, you know, how we go about coaching. You know, I think my parents, the be your best, be thankful, enjoy the precious present is certainly how I was raised, without maybe using those phrases. That was how it was. The toughness, togetherness, and find a way. When you're raised on a farm, you just have to find a way to get it done. And it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be exactly what you thought it was going to be, because the weather says we have to get this done now. Or, you know, I use the phrase this year with our team before the NCAA tournament. At this point in time, the hay is in the barn. They looked at me like, what are you talking about? We have no idea. You know, so I think a lot of those, you know, a lot of my beliefs are based upon kind of how I was raised too.
Yeah, a blue collar work hard mentality and no days off, certainly in, right. in the farm life, which are awfully applicable here to all of us in Appalachia. What kind of farm? Tell me a little bit more about farm life, if you don't mind, because that's a fascinating upbringing.
Well, my parents both worked full-time. My dad was a letter carrier for the U.S. Post Office for I don't even know how many years before he retired, but his whole career was spent doing that. And my mom had a number of different jobs. She was a baker. She worked in a couple of different restaurant type of settings. She also worked in catering for a while. And so they both worked full-time and then came home and farmed on the side. So it was more of a hobby farm in some respects, but one that we did a lot of cash crop work, had some animals during the course of time, but we weren't a dairy farm, which is, I grew up in Wisconsin, so a lot of people there had dairy farms. The players, or the people I played basketball with in the morning, they all were the dairy farmers, so our basketball had to be done by 6:30 in the morning so they could go milk the cows and do those. We didn't do that on our farm, so, you know, I just think it was a mentality of the work has to get done, and you know, there are your 8 hours of work that my parents put in, and then there was their passion, which was, you know, being on a farm and raising their kids on a farm on top of that. So I think it was the understanding that, you know, you've got to kind of put your nose to the grindstone and find ways to get things done is something that has always been a part of how I've been wired and raised.
Mentioned the kids, it was siblings, brothers, sisters. Where does Coach P fall in the pecking order?
Yep, I'm the middle child, so you know I'm the one that didn't receive all the things that my older brother is a pastor in Wisconsin. We always laughed because when we were growing up on the farm, he wasn't the tough one, right? So he was the one that was probably in the kitchen helping my mom, and I was the one on the hay wagon unloading hay and helping my dad fix tractors and hay balers and all those kind of things. And then there was my sister who is younger, but she's a massage therapist, and she has an alpaca farm of all things.
Oh.
Yeah, don't ask me. I'm not really sure, but I have
popular.
I have alpaca socks. They're the warmest things you've ever had.
No, incredible. And close with your siblings,
yeah.
You seem very invested in people, and everything that I've been able to ascertain so far is your family is so tight knit, and they're everything to you.
Well, they are, and so it's a great opportunity. I know more of them would have loved to have been here, but it's not very easy for people to just pick up and drive or fly and get here. And so it's been certainly a lot of phone calls and text messages and those type of ways to kind of keep in touch at this point in time.
So coaching was a career choice at what point? You mentioned earlier that, you know, I want to work with young children, a kindergarten teacher. You took a different path. At what moment and why?
Well, that's a really good question, because I had planned on being a coach. I thought I'd be a 6th, 7th, 8th grade teacher and maybe a 6th, 7th, 8th grade coach growing up, or at least when I was in college. That was kind of what my thought process was. And then once I had graduated from college, I was offered a position to be an assistant coach. And didn't take it right away. Wasn't something. I got married right out of college. My husband and I dated. We met each other in high school. I guess we weren't necessarily high school sweethearts. We met the end of our senior year. We played for arch rival teams. And so he was the best player on the team that won a state championship our senior year. And he was the guy that our school didn't like all that much because he was their best player and they beat us, you know. So we met during an all-star game opportunity and then dated throughout 5 years of college, got married after college. After we got married, then we had to decide what was next. And so we planned on probably moving back to Wisconsin, and he was a social worker and I was going to be a teacher, and we were going to find jobs. And then the opportunity to get into coaching presented itself. And so we did that. We took that opportunity and kind of ran with it. And so I'm very blessed because I have a husband who has followed my career, his entire career. So wherever we have been, he's found jobs, whether that was in social work. He did that for, I think, 17, maybe 18 years. Then he became a stay-at-home dad when our kids were young. When we moved to a community where we didn't have family per se, and we were starting our, we had our second child, we had Lexi. And so he's become, he was a stay-at-home dad. And then as our kids were older, then he went back into some social work for a little bit, and then has been a landscaper the last few years. And now we talk about it a little bit, and his job might be to go support our kids, go watch them play in college, and be, you know, be able to go spend some time with them now, and then we'll figure it out after that.
How did you balance it all, being a mom, being a coach, advancing at every level that you advanced to, moving around quite a bit, and obtaining everything, dare I say, that you wanted to or set your mind to professionally, while also keeping it all together at home? Take me through that.
Well, I think my husband has a lot to do with that. And there have been times, you know, I think there's a lot of guilt you feel as a mother in terms of missing things a great deal for what our kids are doing and not being able to spend as much time with them as you want. So a couple of things. One, my husband would always tell me it's not quantity, it's quality. You know, when you're here, be here. And then the second part of it is I've been really fortunate and very blessed that our family, our Jay, AJ, and Lexi, our kids, they've been a part of whatever program we've been a part of. They are integrated within our team. And so yesterday it was kind of neat because now they're in college and they're hanging out with college kids. And so to meet new college kids, when I asked them, we were in the locker room before the press conference, do you want to meet our team? And they were both like, yeah, of course we do. Absolutely. We want to spend some time. They were upset. AJ and Lexi were not really upset, but disappointed that they couldn't stay and watch the first team workout yesterday. And you know, they are, our family is totally in tune with what's going on with, you know, with our team. And so been really fortunate that way. But I also think there are a lot of opportunities that our family has had because of what I do. And there are also a lot of disadvantages that our family has because of what I do. And so we try to fall in love with the great parts of it and kind of let the other ones go.
We're talking with Don Plitzewite, the sixth Mountaineer women's basketball head coach, as we continue on here on the Mountaineer Insider podcast. Well, let's pivot to some X's and O's and what you've been able to accomplish here day one. You wasted no time from the podium at the press conference yesterday. You changed clothes, you're on the BPF floor, and you had your first workout. How did it go?
I thought it went really well. You know, I thought it was great to be able to be in the space where we're actually doing what we love doing, being on the court, teaching. Really fortunate for me is that we have our assistant coaching staff who is right here. And so we've done this together. We know how to work together and kind of bounce things off each other. And one coach is instructing the drill and another coach is at a basket helping, and we can kind of walk around and we all are kind of in a good space where we can help each other with all of it. So I would say this, I think the young ladies who were here were very open to doing new things and were very receptive and were trying to do what we ask. Now, there's a lot of teaching that goes on, and so there are a lot of things that are certainly different, but I thought they were incredibly receptive. I thought their work ethic was great. I thought they really were trying to do what we asked, and in the end, they had an awful lot of fun. I thought we competed at a high level. All of our drills in practice are set up to be developmental in nature, but then also competitive in nature too. So once we know what we're doing, then we're competing, whether it's against ourselves individually to see if we've gotten better from the last time that we did that, or, you know, against each other. There's a number that we're working towards, or there's just an overall number. It's 12 shots, and our goal is, you know, to make 9 or 10 out of 12, whatever the the number is. So that's probably the, at when I did go to college and I couldn't be an elementary school teacher, I thought, well, maybe I can be a math teacher. So I went into math and I was studying that for quite a while until all of a sudden became theoretical math and explained why. And then I said, forget that. I'm not into that. And then I went into biology. So the numbers, the analytics behind the game are something that I love and something that we try to use to our advantage with our team to build a competitive environment within practice, even for drills that normally may not have that component to it.
Interesting. Talk to me more about that, because the game and sports really are evolving, where biomechanics are becoming a part of it. And you just mentioned, you know, the analytics and the data that is there that you can use to formulate decisions and philosophies. And there's also just good old school eye tests, you know, the anecdotal, the gut feeling. How do you weigh the two and how do you apply the two?
Well, it's really interesting because, you know, one of the books that I read a long time ago was about, you know, the Carolina way and Dean Smith. And one of the things that he talked about was offensively building confidence in practice. And so I think we use the analytics in a lot of different ways. One of them is for the players themselves, so that they can see on a day-to-day basis, you know, I feel like I'm getting better, so I feel good. My shot or scoring or whatever it is, my defense, I feel like I'm learning. But then there's also the numbers to kind of help prove that to some extent. And so that's been the confidence building in young ladies is something that I think is really important. And we're able to do some of that through the analytics, through the numbers of the game. You know, I think we've been really fortunate in the respect that our players, I think, want to get better and they want to digest the game at a whole new level. I really believe that the players here are in that same mix where they, when we gave them a simple, showed them a picture, this is why. We do a lot of teaching of the why we do things. But maybe, again, that's the biology and math background, because I want to know, you know, why, rather than we're just going to go do this and this is what we're going to teach, here's why we're going to teach this footwork. You know, in watching John Beilein when I was at the University of Michigan and he was there at the same time, watching him teach was something that was very educational. It was very inspiring in a lot of ways, but it was also very simple, if you will. And so those are a lot of the same things that we do in terms of teaching. Okay, this is why we're going to teach you to square up this way, because this is going to help prevent takeoff travels. You know, we want to become efficient in the game. Here's a detail. At the end of practice yesterday, we have a couple of phrases we use over and over and over again. Every kid that catches the ball, we want them to catch and be a threat with it. Catch to shoot the basketball, penetrate to score, sit to pass, or get to 2 feet around the rim. And so it was interesting in practice. The things that we do are very simple and they're very repetitive. Now, we may change how we structure the drill itself, but the teaching points are going to remain the same. Maybe that's the kindergarten teacher part of it. That's going to remain very simple. And so by the probably about the 10th minute of the last drill, as we went into it and we repeated it a few times, I could ask them, so now what would I say to this player at this time? And they'd say, this is what you'd say, sit to pass. You're exactly right. See, now we know. Now we know why we're doing it. Now, it doesn't mean we're going to be able to do it right away, because it's a new habit that we're forming. And so I think it's our goal is to keep it simple, to keep it fun, to keep it competitive.
You mentioned John Beilein. Mountaineer fans obviously very familiar with his work and his attention to detail. Something that you picked up there that you just mentioned from Coach Beilein. What other coaches, what other mentors really made their mark on you? And who do you take with you here to West Virginia?
Well, it started for me with my sixth grade basketball coach, honestly, because, you know, Diane Bain was someone who we're going to get after, but we're going to have an awful lot of fun and just keep moving forward. You know, I had a chance in high school to play for great high school coaches and high school coaches, and Dara Schramm, my varsity basketball coach and Jim Hofferman, both coaches who took us to a state championship. And it was, you know, the fundamentals of the game, bounce pass here and throw this pass there. And, you know, and then on to college, I played for Kevin Borseth at Michigan Tech University, who then went on to coach at UW Green Bay. So I started coaching with him and at Michigan Tech, and then went with him to, you know, Green Bay and coached with him at the University of Michigan as well. Jane Albright, who was a great, great recruiter and promoter. I coached with her at the University of Wisconsin. You know, and then I think it's Mike Williams, who's actually coaching our daughter. We coached together, excuse me, at Grand Valley State, and we were probably one of the first programs to kind of do an offensive defensive coordinator spot. So he was someone who played for Dick Bennett. There's a great name. And Tony Bennett was someone he coached. So just a number of coaches along the line.
Well, Coach, coaches and continuity, awfully important, and it looks like you have that with your staff. You're bringing three with you here from South Dakota. I'm really curious to hear about Jason, to hear about Aaron and Ariel. Combined, you add it all up, they've been with you, and you've had a relationship with them for a long, long time. So if you would, tell me why continuity on your staff is important and what these three individuals bring to the table.
Well, you know, when you asked the question about reflecting, about being at West Virginia University, my thankfulness came in last night when I got back to the hotel and thought, man, I don't know how somebody can do this without having a staff with them right from the beginning. And because we had a staff with us on day one, we were able to get an awful lot done in terms of within our own program and then also in a recruiting standpoint as well. So continuity, essential for us to be able to build and to grow. You know, we understand each other. I did say this in the press conference. You know, this is a group that grinds and puts a ton of time in, and, you know, they've got the worker mentality, but they also are fun. We enjoy spending time together. You know, we spend a great deal of time together outside of our jobs, even though when you're together outside of your job, you're still kind of doing your job in some way because there's usually phone calls and text messages. But a group that, you know, I trust that they are always going to do the right thing, that they are always going to build our young ladies up, that they're going to represent us at a very high level. And so, and honestly, they've helped kind of raise our kids. They do anything in the world to help our family, and we do the same for their family. So it's been, you know, a great deal of fun. I've had a chance to work with Aaron the longest. Aaron and I have been together for 6 years. I remember when I was accepted the job at the University of South Dakota, he is someone who said, well, the reason I haven't been able to get a Division I job is because I don't have Division I experience, and I think that can be the case at times. And so for me personally, it's about finding the right people. The people that are going to help us grow young ladies into confident young women, who are going to help us develop them on and off the basketball court. And then we will learn the rest of it, you know, as time goes on, in terms of, you know, just because somebody hasn't had the experience at this level doesn't mean they can't do a great job at this level. And so I think Aaron and I have worked together the longest for 6 years now. Then Jason came after our first year together. Jason is someone who, you know, has had head coaching experience, incredibly organized, does a great job of filling in all the details in so many different ways. And now Jason and his family will be moving out here, and that's a lot. It's a lot to ask someone to pick up their family and move them and relocate across the country. And, you know, his family is on board with doing that, but not that that's going to be easy for them either. We understand that that's still going to be a challenge. I was thinking about that today driving in. You know, we're in a different spot now as a family where we don't have to look at necessarily school districts for our kids, because our kids aren't in school anymore. They're in college. They still are in school, but they're settled in at that point, where now, you know, Jason and his wife Courtney have to really look into that for their daughter as well. And then Ariel came with us and joined us last year when we had an opening on staff. And Ariel is someone who I've known for about 15 years now, someone that I recruited when I was coaching at the University of Michigan. She was right down the road from us. We didn't get her to say yes at that point in time, but did get her to say yes to come coach with us at the University of South Dakota, and did have a chance, you know, to get her to say yes this time. So we've gotten two out of three. We've won two out of three battles in the recruiting phase with her. But she's had, you know, had a tremendous career at Notre Dame. and is played at the highest level and just has an incredible demeanor and work ethic, and I think just does a great job. I think all three of them are tremendous in skill development. I think all three of them are very skilled and excellent evaluators and recruiters. I think they build authentic relationships with young ladies, whether that's through recruiting to begin with, and then now certainly I think the players who are here are going to experience that at the same time. I think they are great skill developers. I think they are, you know, individuals who are passionate about what they do, and I think that shows, you know, and I think that they're just they're really cool people to hang out with at the same time. So we have an awful lot of fun together.
And as we wrap up here, Coach, with you, and I can't wait, and I've met all three, and they seem to be just fantastic individuals. Can you maybe give me a bit of a breakdown of the responsibility, or how you deploy your coaches? Is one working with the front court, another working with the back court? Is another more game strategy? Tell me how you deploy your resources with your coaching staff.
Well, I think it depends, certainly. We've done it a couple different ways from year to year, but what we did last year, which really we had a tremendous amount of success with it. You know, I think Jason has done a lot of the scouting of our opponents, and then he works very closely with our practice guys to try to simulate what our opponents do. So some programs have, you know, this coach has this scout, this coach has that scout. We had tried that, and I thought that worked okay. But the reality was then all of a sudden that coach who had the scout maybe had to go recruiting, and then all of a sudden, you know, maybe your practice squad wasn't looking the same. And at times I was kind of trying to coach the team that was simulating what our opponent does, either offensively or defensively. But then I didn't have enough time to really focus on our own team and what they were doing. And so Jason kind of really runs that aspect of it and kind of really puts our practice guys in a great spot. There's a lot of the scouting analytics of it that way. Aaron and Ariel, both. Aaron probably focuses more on the ball handling, skill development, but also kind of coaching, but not just our perimeter kids in games, but just the offensive end of it. For the most part, Ariel has done a lot with our post players in particular. That's really kind of her strength. That's where she played. And so, you know, maybe Aaron has more of the perimeter game and Ariel more of the post game, and Jason maybe just kind of the overall game planning parts of it.
And the final thing that I'd like to close with is you often talk about the precious present. What is in the precious present for you and this program? And if it's an oxymoron, but the immediate future as well. Where do you need to go with West Virginia women's basketball here in your first 30 to 60 days?
Well, the first thing we have to do is build connections, you know, and that's with the players that are here first and foremost, the recruits, young ladies who are coming in, and then also with, you know, young ladies that we are recruiting and with their families and their coaches, you know, and build our roster. You know, it's something that's really going to be important for us, that we continue to grow that. And that is something that is our number one priority. You know, and then it's extending outside of that to individuals within the university, West Virginia University, and our athletic department and our community. You know, but I think they understand this, and we're going to build that over time. Right now, our immediate focus has to be with the young ladies who are here right now, because this is hard. You know, transition is very challenging. It really is. And our son is in a situation where he's going through a transition within his program. So as a mom, I know that it can be very challenging. And so I understand that this isn't something that these young ladies were expecting. It's not something that they necessarily signed up for. So it's important that we take care of them first and foremost.
Coach, I think everybody is at ease that you're the person to steer us in the right direction. We welcome you here to WVU. We look forward to watching the precious present and also the bright future.
Sounds good. Thank you so much, Dan.
Well, folks, a terrific snapshot into who Dawn Plitzewhite is, what makes her tick, and how she's been able to grow. And as not only a head coach as a person, but all of the building blocks in her life, not just in her profession, and how I think they're going to be applied here at WVU. We got a pretty good look into that. I hope you enjoyed it. I really, again, am appreciative of the time that Coach P was able to spend, and I wish her all the best, and I look forward to working with her.
Well, also on the docket is spring football. We're just a couple and a half weeks or so removed from the spring game coming up in the University City. And as guys prepare, I had an opportunity to sit down and chat with a couple of integral pieces in this 2022 football season, at least on paper and likely well beyond that. It's running back Tony Mathis. It's also center Zach Frazier. Two key components to the West Virginia offense, one-on-one interviews with them. Let's first begin with the new RB1. Well, Tony, first, before we get into a couple of other topics, I just want to check in with you to see how this spring is going for you and how you're trying to build upon what was really a productive 21 season with you coming onto the scene.
Mm-hmm. Spring has been going really well. The team coming along, the offense, the O-line, everybody's doing good. We're growing day by day and individually. I'm playing with a lot of confidence and trying to lead as well as being the starter running back right now, so everything has been going smooth.
How does that sound, starting running back?
That sounds good. Still same goal of being one or two, but I know a bigger role, so I'm going to lead and try to be that guy.
What makes you prepared to be the starting running back? Why do you feel that that responsibility has been given to you by Coach Brown?
I don't think it's been given. I know everything's earned, but I know that with Coach Brown, all he needs is trust. So if he can trust you, then you can play ball for him. And once you build that trust with him, everything will be smooth.
How did you go about building that trust?
Just working hard and head down and showing him that he can trust me and making plays, showing him that he can trust me.
What did you learn about yourself in the last 6 to 9 months?
I'm pretty strong mentally, mm-hmm. Definitely.
Let's talk about that mental strength, because I would imagine – right now in this day and age, as we sit here with the transfer portal being what it is, with NIL and all of the distractions that surround today's college athlete, what sort of mental toughness is required to be able to survive and exist in this world?
I mean, just knowing who you build relationships with. Like, this game is all built off about like chemistry and who you playing the game with. So I think I'm big on that, and I'm a big people person, and I care about who I love. So I guess that's the reason I stayed focused and stayed the course.
Relationships untied and undefeated still, even in this day where it seems as if loyalty has been thrown out the window, not with you.
Definitely. Yes.
So what do you do to try to keep that loyalty, that focus, that mental toughness when, you know, there's so much of that not occurring? Talk to me about how Tony Mathis goes about it.
I just turned 21, so I try to stay off Twitter, but I stay on other social media apps, but Twitter is pretty the rat poison, so I try to stay off that more than anything.
A little rat poison, huh? A little Nick Saban there, huh?
Yeah, something like that.
So who keeps you grounded? Who's your support team? Who's on your Mount Rushmore, right, that keeps it real for you?
Mm-hmm. On the staff or as in?
Yes. Anybody that you confide in, that you trust in, if you're okay sharing that.
Yeah, definitely Coach Scott. He's been somebody who always let me, even when things was going wrong or good. So he's definitely been on the team. Really the whole staff as well. So, and plus with the new coach, Coach Harrell, he's done a good job, and he's tagging everybody along. So that's what kept me grounded here as well.
So you're ride or die, it sounds like, with the Mountaineer Nation.
Definitely, yes, sir.
Okay. What made you get there? With this program, with this team, why, no matter what temptations may be out there or what is on the other side of the fence, why are you saying, you know what, I'm ride or die WVU?
I guess it's just what God wants me to be, and that's what's where my heart is. So I'm WVU.
Yeah, and you also probably have a pretty good offensive line there that might want to keep you. That's enticing. That's incentive enough, isn't it?
Definitely, yeah.
So let's talk about those guys. You mentioned to the media here a short time ago, earlier this week, that there's some names that aren't being talked about enough and some guys that are really going to surprise a lot of folks up front.
Definitely on the offensive side, yeah. Definitely Zach continues to do his thing. Quay Hubbard came along. He's doing a great job. The left side is committer, wide. Everybody's playing a huge role. So I'm looking forward to the season with the O-lineman.
Yeah. What sort of chemistry is developed between a running back and his offensive line?
Yeah, a big chemistry. We have a group chat. We send funny videos here and there with just the running backs and the O-lineman. So our chemistry built huge.
Yeah, what we hear about quarterbacks taking care of their O-line. How about running backs? I mean, do you ever get stuck with the bill at dinner?
Nah, not yet, but soon it's coming. Soon it's coming.
All right, well, yeah, I mean, the running backs got to take care of their O-line just like the quarterbacks do. Let's talk about your fellow guys in that position room. Is there a good spirited competition going on with those guys? Yeah. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, it's going very good with us. Like, everybody's positive, leading. Everybody's got a leading role, so everybody doing good. Justin, he's doing very good. Lin J, he's done good. Jalen done. We all working and we all having fun with it. So it don't even feel like competition. It feel like we just grinding, playing a game we love.
What's the dynamic as far as the skill set is concerned in that room? You bring a certain set of skills to the table. Lin J, others, I would imagine they have different skills that can help this team. What is that room collectively like?
It's lightning and thunder times. Shiftiness is everything in there, so we're looking forward to it. Everybody has their own. Everybody runs different.
Who are we not talking about that we should be talking about?
Just know the whole running back room needs to be talked about. So, Lin J, Justin, and Jalen.
Good stuff there from Tony Mathis. And I'll tell you what, folks, it's so encouraging to hear a guy so committed and so grounded in the era in which we are currently navigating all throughout college athletics in every single sport, a real breath of fresh air to hear the things that we heard from Tony Mathis. Well, what we've heard from Zach Frazier and what I was able to see as I was taping this audio interview essentially is a guy that is young, hungry, extremely excited, and embracing the role that he is needed for. And that is not to just be a guy, but it's to be the guy in one of the strongest strengths of this WVU football team, the offensive line. And oh, by the way, not too early to start talking about West Virginia's first game of the 22 season, what it means for a kid like Zach Frazier for his next football game to be the backyard brawl. I hope you enjoy this conversation with Big Number 54. All right, Zach, no more, you know, potential, no more. This guy's an up-and-comer. This guy's now an upperclassman. I'm talking about you. What's it like being the guy instead of being a guy?
I mean, it's pretty special. You know, it's something that I take very seriously and, you know, try to be the best teammate that I can be for everyone and, you know, try to pick them up when they're down and stuff like that. So,
what have you learned about yourself, especially in being the guy now instead of a guy? How have you gotten to this point? How have you positioned yourself to embrace it?
Yeah, I mean, I just try to work as hard as I can every day, day in, day out. I try to be the same person every day. Really, that's it. That's just it. Just by hard work. So,
but it doesn't seem like this is something that you're shying away from. This is, you know, when I talk to you about this, your eyes kind of light up. You're ready for it. You embrace it.
Yeah, I mean, I would say before, I wouldn't embrace it, but you know, now it's time. I embrace it. Something. It's a challenge for me, so I'm taking it head on. And,
you feel more comfortable speaking up in the room, and you could say, you know what, this is my position room right now.
Yeah. I feel confident talking in front of any of the guys, and if I ever have to talk to anyone, I'll pull them off to the side and, you know, have a one-off with them and, you know, just try to make sure everything's all good.
Tony Mathis was telling me a little earlier that this is a position group that's not talked about enough, that there's a lot of progress being made and a lot of work being done. Can you give us some perspective into what is actually going on in that position group room?
Yeah, I mean, this spring we've all worked together and we're really meshing together really well right now. Everyone is playing on the same page. This is the same core group that we had last year, so we've had a whole year of playing together. We've made a lot of mistakes together, learned from them, and I just feel like we all have a lot of experience up front. So,
what is our strength up front? If you could hang your hat on the identity, the strength, who are we, what are we up front?
I would say just a physical group of guys that are blue collar and are really just going to get after people and try to set the tone and really try to run the ball. So,
strength of this team, you think?
as far as like...
Yeah, I mean, like West Virginia football in 2022 is going to be known for its offensive line.
I would say that's definitely going to be one of our strengths. At least that's what we're going to work for, you know, to keep, to make sure that, you know, we have our end right and we're going to work hard and really just try to run the ball as much as we can.
So, yeah, okay. Yeah. You really light up when you talk about running the football. What do you have behind you in that backfield, starting with Tony Mathis and, of course, others? It seems like, and the sense that I'm getting is there's a lot of chemistry between the two position groups that's really starting to unfold.
Yeah, I mean, Tony's tore it up this spring. He's had some really great runs. He has great vision, makes great cuts. I can't even count how many explosive plays he's already had. So that's what I'm looking forward to the most is seeing him take off and hopefully us helping him get there. So,
what are we not talking about enough? What's going on behind the scenes? What are the success stories that you see that are really starting to brew in the lab that are going to either, A, surprise a lot of folks, or B, get folks to really excited about?
Yeah, I mean, like as far as up front goes, or what?
Yeah, or it could be on the offensive side of the ball. It could be things that you're witnessing on the defensive side of the ball. What are we not talking about enough? The mainstream media, the fans on the outside. What are we not getting? You know what I mean? That's happening behind the scenes that we're eventually going to see.
I would say our offense is a lot different, and you know, I feel like we're more like ready to score. Mm-hmm. Than before. I feel like it's a lot simpler, so it's a lot easier for us to play fast. As far as the defense goes, they've been playing well too. I'd say our linebacker Lee Koba has been playing really well, high level. And I think he's going to be a really great player for us.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to seeing it all unfold here. Obviously, the spring game will be our first debut. Now, give me a few things that you want to sharpen up before spring ball and eventually before the fall workouts begin. What's on your checklist here before we kick off at Pitt?
Yeah, I mean, every day I go out to practice, I have something that I want to work on individually. Like, my main emphasis, like, for example, this spring has been – like my punch and pass, bro. So that's what I'm working on right now. I feel like I always have, you know, I'm trying to make myself well-rounded, you know, in every area. So whatever my weaknesses are, I just try to work on it. So,
a little early to be talking about this, but inside of 150 days until Pitt, for, you know, a born and raised West Virginian, What does that mean? I'll be the first guy to ask you that question about week one here, the backyard brawl returning, you having an opportunity to play in it. I understand it's April.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, you're ready to roll now.
Yeah. I mean, when I committed here, I had that game in my sights. you know, growing up here, that's the game. That's the game, you know, you grew up watching that you wanted to play in. That, I mean, if there's one game I wanted to play in, growing up, it was a Pitt game. Mm-hmm. You know, just the rivalry, you can't beat it.
And you get to play in it.
Yeah, I can't wait.
And that means what to you?
Yeah, it means the world. You know, growing up 30 minutes down the road, growing up watching, I mean, it means everything. That's just, I'm so excited to play in that game, so.
Well, that was an extra lengthy edition of the Mountaineer Insider Podcast. And if you've made it to this point, we've thrown a lot of content your way this week, and we've tried to cram it all into one big pod. And I hope you have enjoyed this opportunity to hear from not only Zach Frazier, Tony Mathis, but Don Plitzewite. It was a fun one to put together, and we can't wait for the next one. So until next time, folks, hail West Virginia. Let's go Mountaineers. And thanks for joining us on this week's edition of the Mountaineer Insider Podcast.
You've been listening to the Mountaineer Insider here on MSN, the Mountaineer Sports Network. Like the podcast? Give us 5 stars or leave a review. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at WVUMSN or find the latest news and information on the Mountaineers at WVUSports.com. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation of MSN, the Mountaineer Sports Network.